Perfect. Thank you, Caitlin. Hello, everyone. My name is Dwayne Davis. I am co-chair for OFCY's POC. I'm calling today's meeting to order. The date is Wednesday, November 3rd, 6:07 p.m. And I'm glad everyone could be here today. Just going to go over roll call first. If I could have everyone who's here say their names. And in what district they represent. I'm just going to go off the participants that I see here on my screen from POC. So, Jorge.
Good evening, everyone. Jorge Velasco, District 5 representative.
Thank you. And then Pocolia.
Good evening, Pocolia, representing District 4.
Great. Thank you. And then me, Dwayne Davis, representing District 3, again, co-chair. And then, yes, thank you all for that. We're going to go over some introductions and announcements next, and then I'll go ahead and review the agenda. Do we have any introductions or announcements at this time?
City staff, I'll pass it on. I'm Mike Wetzel, I'm the program planner here in Children Youth Services for OFCY. I'll pass it to Scott.
Hi, everyone. Scott Kim, OFCY program analyst. Caitlin.
Hi, everyone. I'm Caitlin Forgash, Administrative Assistant for OFCY and Children and Youth Services.
And we don't have any announcements as staff at this point.
Perfect. Thank you. So we'll first begin with open forum. We're going to...
I'm sorry. One thing for the review of the agenda, though. We do have an update there. Sorry. We have adoption of continuing resolution to continue conducting POC meetings. After further consultation, we realized that is not a requirement of a subcommittee to be passing this resolution. This was the resolution that the full POC passed on the 13th of October and reaffirms that they're full POC meetings, but it is not a requirement of the subcommittee. So it is something that we can pass on addressing.
Okay, so we're going to skip over the adoption.
There you go.
Thank you. Okay, so yeah, we're going to skip number 3 on the agenda, but we're going to begin with open forum, the presentation of the OFCY independent fiscal year 2020-2021 evaluation report by Social Policy Research Associates, SPR. In those 3 parts listed there, administrative matters, including general announcements, upcoming meetings, and then we'll go into adjournment. And at this time, do we have anyone who wants to participate in the open forum? Any of our attendees?
And if you do, we have 6 attendees right now. If you are interested in speaking in open forum, you could use the raise your hand function.
Okay, it looks like there is no one at this time who wants to participate, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll move right on into the presentation of the OFCY independent evaluation report. And I'll pass it on to city staff for that.
Yeah, hi, and I'll do a brief introduction again. This is Mike. The legislation that established OFCY requires that every year an independent third-party evaluation takes place. The city contracts currently with Social Policy Research Associates to conduct this evaluation. And we have 2 members of their team here, Heather Lewis Sharp and Mika Clark. I'll pass it off to Mika to lead this.
Thanks, Mike. Good evening, everyone. I'm going to share my screen for a moment with our PowerPoint slide. Can I get some confirmation if people see it?
Yeah. We see it.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, thanks for having us. Evaluation Subcommittee meeting. For those of you who don't know us, Heather and I work for Social Policy Research Associates, which is an Oakland-based evaluation and research firm. And we've had the pleasure of working with OFCY for the last 7 years. And today I'm happy to present the results of the fiscal year 2020-2021 evaluation for you all. If you have any questions as we're going, please feel free to chime in and ask. We'll have some pauses for questions in addition to that. Okay. So before we launch into our findings, I wanted to give an overview of the report. As in previous years, the final report has three sections. The first is a section where we go over OFCY-wide findings, and that's the main report looking at what's been going on at the fund level. Then we have a strategy level summary for each of the 9 strategies, followed by a profile for each program, which shows enrollment, attendance, and survey results for each individual program. So this setup allows us to see what is going on and who's being served at 3 different levels. So we've got the overall fund level, then we can look at what's going on within each of the 9 strategies, and then what's going on within each of the 149 programs that were funded this last year. Okay, and so now diving into the actual content of the report. On page 3, we have an overview of the funded strategies. So this grant cycle, there are 9 strategies that fall under the areas of early childhood, and that includes the parent engagement and support programs, family resource centers, and socio-emotional well-being in preschool and early childhood care centers strategies. Then we have student success with the engagement and success for elementary and middle school students, as well as comprehensive after-school programs. We have positive youth development, which includes summer programming and youth development and leadership strategies. And finally, we have the transitions to adulthood strategies. This includes high school and post-secondary student success, and career awareness and employment support. Okay, so now that we've kind of covered who's funded, we really wanted to focus on who is being served by these programs this year. And you can find this information on pages 4 to 6 of your report. So we're pleased to note that over 15,000 children and youth participated in OFCY-funded programs in the last fiscal year. And in light of OFCY's commitment to racial equity, the data shows that OFCY programs are serving the OFCY's target population of children and youth who identify as African-American, Black, Latinx, and Asian and Pacific Islander. I just did want to point out that the report, this number of 15,289 children and youth doesn't include the preschoolers who attended child development centers and Head Starts that benefited from the support of mental health consultations in the socio-emotional well-being strategy. It also doesn't include any of the young children who may not have attended programs themselves, but their parents benefited indirectly from their parents' attendance in parent support programs and family resource centers. In addition, the programs in the parent engagement and support and family resource center strategies served 2,213 parents and caregivers last year. And again, we have this breakdown of demographics available for each strategy and for each program as well in the relevant sections of the report. So we looked at the demographics of the city of Oakland so we could compare the youth that were served by OFCY programs to the demographics of the city. I'm looking specifically at children in Oakland between the ages of 0 and 19. And we found that OFCY programs served about 20% of Oakland's Black and Latinx and youth and about 14% of Asian and Pacific Islander youth. We also found that programs serve children and youth across the age spectrum, but 59% were between the ages of 9 and 16. So that's the core group of OFCY children and youth who are being served. And in addition to that, we looked at where the participants live. So if you look at this map, you can see that OFCY children and youth participants were concentrated in West Oakland and along the 880 corridor, a very high percentage in Fruitvale. We found that about 1/4 of OFCY participants live in Fruitvale, and then another 30% live along the Webster Tract Coliseum areas or the Sobrani Park and Elmhurst neighborhoods. Okay, so we also wanted to look a little more closely at race and ethnicity across different age groups. And that's what this chart here is showing. It's showing the proportion of children under 5, what their race and ethnic identity is. And then again, for children 5 to 8, 9 to 12, youth 13 to 16, and then participants who are older than, or 17 and up. In the chart, the more vibrantly pink shades represent a higher proportion of children and youth. And as you can see here, Latinx children were more represented, the children to 0 to 12, than they were among youth ages 13 and up. In comparison, African American, Black, and Asian Pacific Islander participants comprise a higher proportion of children and youth over 5 years old than they did for younger children. So this really largely mirrors city demographic trends, where we see a growing Latinx population among the younger children in the city. So are there any questions at this point about who is being served before we move on to the next part of the presentation? Great, I'll take that as a no. Okay, so I want to take a moment to remind everyone, or tell you for the first time if you hadn't heard about it, that we're using a results-based accountability framework for this evaluation. And this is a framework that the city has adopted, and it guides basically everything we're doing in the evaluation. So just in general, a results-based accountability framework, which is also called RBA, is a data-driven process to help communities take action to create measurable change. And it's something that lots of local governments are adopting across the country. And so what we have here in this visual are the most relevant RBA goals for the city and the most current indicator from the city's RBA dashboard, just to give some context to those goals. And the goals range from children being ready for kindergarten all the way up to young people staying out of the juvenile justice system. So OFCY funds programs whose missions are to contribute to one or several of these goals. We know that's what's going on at the family level and the school level are also very critical, but the programs serving children, youth, and families can play a really important role in contributing to these positive outcomes. And there's a vast body of research showing that regular participation in high quality programs will lead to positive long-term outcomes for children and youth. And that leads us to the three primary questions that we ask under the RBA framework. So our aim in this evaluation is to investigate first, how much do programs accomplish, which we answer with enrollment and attendance data. Second, how well did they do it, which we answer by looking at if programs accomplished what they had projected they would do, and crucially, considering participant feedback to assess program quality. And finally, is anyone better off? Which we assess mostly through self-reported outcomes from participant surveys, and then also looking at some other data points we have, like the number of youth who are placed into jobs and internships as a result of the program. So now I want to go back to that visual with the city goals, just to give you an example of some of the data points that we use to assess progress toward the city goals. So for this example, we're looking at our older youth more connected to school or work as a result of the programs. And on page 7 of the report, we have sample data points for each of the other goals as well. What we see here is that 84% of career awareness and employment support participants worked in an internship or job placement during their program. And 86% of high school and post-secondary success participants agreed that their program helps them feel more confident going to college. So this is some of the ways that we're looking to see if programs are contributing to the city's goals. And on page 2 in the executive summary, you'll find a table of RBA metrics. And it looks like this. So I know there's a lot here. There's a lot going on. I'll give you a shot of all the different data points that we're looking at. And you can see that this little metrics card is broken up into those 3 questions that we are using to guide our evaluation. How much did programs do? How well did they do it? And is anyone better off? So take another little pause to see if anyone has any questions about the RBA framework or any of the goals of the evaluation. Okay. And moving on to our first question, which was, how much did programs do? So programs did a lot over the last fiscal year, particularly given challenges by COVID. Still, we found that there was a drop in child and youth enrollment since last year. So through our interviews and reviewing the quarterly reports that programs submit, we learned that enrolling children and youth in virtual services was very challenging for programs. Many young people were experiencing Zoom fatigue, and many of the recruitment practices that programs draw on, such as recruiting youth at in-person events and at schools, just weren't feasible last year. So those were some of the challenges that programs faced. In addition, for those programs that were provided in-person services, some of them, because of public safety requirements, had to have smaller cohorts when they were doing that. So that's another reason why there might be a drop in enrollment. Still, there were some programs who were actually able to enroll more students than last year because of the virtual format. Because people found it easier to join when they could just join on their computer. Okay, so we wanted to see if there were particular strategies that saw a more significant drop in enrollment. So on this, we have the number of youth who were served by strategy. The pink is for fiscal year 2021, and then the gray is this year, fiscal year 1920. And here we have some of the strategies that saw the biggest drop in enrollment. So that's programming, comprehensive after school, and youth development strategies. And then, here we have the strategies that had more stable enrollment over the year. So in addition to looking at enrollment over the 2 years by strategy, we also looked to see if there were any specific groups of children and youth who were less likely to participate this year. The biggest thing we found is that children ages 5 to 8 had the biggest drop-off in enrollment of other groups. And that makes sense considering the Zoom fatigue that many of them are probably experiencing as they were going remote learning with school. We also found that there was some difference in by race and ethnicity in who saw the largest drop in enrollment. So we saw that Black and Asian children and youth comprised a somewhat smaller proportion of OFCY participants than they had in the previous year. And that did vary a little bit by strategy. For example, there was a lower proportion of Black and children and youth in the career awareness strategy, youth development leadership, and comprehensive after school, but they actually made up a higher proportion of participants in the high school and post-secondary student success strategies and the summer strategy, if you compare to last year. So it was depending on the strategy. Now we're going to move on to the second question. Oh, sorry, the second part of the question, looking at attendance patterns. So again, there's a lot to be programs to be proud of. I do want to note that because after-school programs didn't track their attendance in the same way, we didn't include their attendance in the report this year. And that's because a lot of them were supporting programs during the school day. And so just the way they were tracking that was kind of all over the map. So we just excluded those hours from what we're looking at. So excluding those comprehensive after-school programs, programs provided over 1 million hours of enriching experiences for Oakland's young people. And these are experiences that, again, they might not otherwise have access to. And on average, youth received about 100 hours of service. So you look at this chart on the right-hand side, we're looking at how long youth spent in, children and youth spent in their programs. Because OFCY is designed to serve a very diverse group of children and youth who have different needs and different interests, and programs are providing different types of services, the amount of time that they engaged in programs varied. But over half spent at least 100 hours in programming. And this is something we expect to see over the year, because by design, some programs are meant to be more of a light touch service and others are very intensive. So here we have hours of attendance by age. There isn't any like real discernible pattern here. But we also looked at hours of attendance by race and ethnicity, and we did see some variation here. So we have Asian Pacific Islander youth, multiracial and biracial children and youth, and African American and Black children and youth spending more time in programming than the average participants. So some of these differences may be related to the ages of participants. So for example, we have the Middle Eastern North African children and youth spending the least amount of time in programming. That might be because they were also most likely to be in the early childhood programs, which generally provide less hours just because of the age of the children that they're working with. They mostly do weekly play groups for 1 to 2 hours with parents, things like that. So before I move on to the second question, how will the programs do it? Are there any questions?
This is Hori. I have a quick question. So these results say, you know, excluding comprehensive after-school programs, how would that have changed or would have impacted the data that we're being shown now?
Generally, the comprehensive after-school programs have some of the highest number of hours of attendance because people are attending every day for, you know, about 3 hours. So the number hours we're seeing are definitely lower than we would see if we were including them. Does that answer your question?
It does, thank you. And would that be something that we would potentially want to dive into potentially, like that information? Would that information yield differently than what we're seeing now?
Yeah, I think that the problem is that the after-school programs didn't track their attendance consistently. So it's kind of hard to make sense of their attendance hours. I'm just thinking like historically when the comprehensive after-school programs had a very set structure where they were, you know, serving children for like 3 to 4 hours after school. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sorry, Mike, are you gonna?
I'd say last year was a real off year for attendance tracking, just because the programs in the year of COVID panic, pandemic, some programs provided in-school work. The after-school programs were fully integrated with the classes. They helped the teachers out doing warm openings and classroom activities. Some did a kind of hybrid model with some work during the school day and after school, and some did more of the traditional after school, though being it virtual. And at the end of the school year, when they offered in-person, some were able to bring back in-person services as well. But with that, the programs, you know, some were enrolling the entire school and entire classes because they were touched by the services in part, and some were doing extremely small enrollment. So it was all over the place last year. This year, we look to have real consistent data again for after school, because the program model this year has gotten a lot more stable, just since last year again was so chaotic.
Yeah, so I think we had some programs, you could have two programs that were basically doing the same thing, serving students during the school day, and then one would show attendance for the full day, and then another would only show attendance if they were doing very targeted support for particular students. So I think that's why it didn't feel appropriate to include it in the evaluation this year.
Okay, Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And you are including information on their demographics and who yes. was served in the programs.
Yeah. Yeah. Their enrollment data is included, just not the attendance data. So like how many hours of service they were receiving. Okay. So moving on to that second question, how well did programs do it? So first we look at how close programs came to meeting their projections. So at the start of the year, they project how many youth they plan on enrolling and how many hours of service they plan on providing. So this is just looking at how close they came to those goals. And as you can see here, on average, programs enrolled 100% of the youth that they projected to enroll. So it may be less than it had been in previous years, but they're still meeting the goals that they made for this year. And in terms of hours of service, they actually exceeded on average what they had projected to do. And now moving on to the second way that we look at this, how well the programs do it question, and what I believe to be one of the most meaningful parts of the evaluation is participant feedback. So we looked at a few key components of program quality that research has shown are associated with strong positive youth development outcomes in out-of-school programming. So these areas include creating a safe environment, having activities that you'd find interesting and engaging, and forming connections between participants and caring adults. So these are like the main primary indicators of program quality that we're interested in looking at to answer how well programs are doing it. And here we can see the results from the participant survey. And as you can see on this slide, youth rated programs strongly in each of these areas. So 92% of youth, for example, agreed that they felt safe in their program. I do want to point out that the survey includes a not sure option. So youth can either strongly disagree, say they're not sure, agree, or strongly agree to each of these statements. So just because 92% agreed doesn't mean that 8% agree, they might have marked not sure. So just want to make sure that's clear. And turning to our early childhood programs, where parents and caregivers are the one filling out the survey. We're looking at areas that are known to create a conducive environment for adult education and supporting the family. So here we display survey results from the parent and caregiver surveys. And again, participants are assessing programs very well in these areas. And then I just wanted to include a couple quotes that from program staff in our interviews about things that they're doing to ensure that their programs are high quality. So first one is from a comprehensive after-school program that was providing services during the school day. So they were pushing in during remote instruction and working with the school day teachers. And this is from Safe Passages at United for Success. They said, our staff took time out of the class to just sit in a breakout room and have a some of our students needed that. So they were able to provide social emotional support for students who were just having a hard time with remote instruction. They were able to provide some more like one-on-one connections that students weren't able to receive in remote instruction with OUS last year. So that was one of the really important things that they were able to do. And then on the right-hand side, we have a quote from one of the career awareness programs. This is Bridges from School to Work. I said, the most important thing is the emotional safety of youth in our program. It's a one-on-one that's built between the counselor and the young person. If somebody feels unwelcomed or not listened to or understood, they won't come back. It just shows again how supporting the youth and creating that safe environment is very important. And now moving on to our third question and probably the most important. Is anyone better off? So when we started this grant cycle, we worked with programs to identify some of the goals that were most important for them. So we're looking for outcomes that we know can set a young person up for success. And the early childhood strategies focus on adult level outcomes, things that we know will help adults best care for the children in their charge. And so for the early childhood programs, we're looking at having connections to resources for families. We're looking at increases in parental competence and knowledge of child development. And then for the strategies that serve children and youth, we focus on 2 to 3 outcomes for each strategy that are related to either academics, youth development, or career awareness, depending on the aim of the strategy. Now, these are the primary indicators that we're looking at for the RBA, but the survey does include a lot of other questions that are tied to a number of other outcomes related to youth development and then some strategy-specific goals as well. Okay, so here, I want to provide a few examples of some of these key outcomes from the RBA from this last year. So we found that 94% of youth in the career awareness and employment support programs agreed that they learned about jobs they can have in the future in their program. And 84% of youth in strategies with an academic focus reported that they learned skills that help with their schoolwork because of their program. And here we have the adult level outcomes for the parent engagement programs and the family resource centers. Again, we have very solid results. We see that 92% of participants were referred to other organizations for support. We see that programs are helping parents and caregivers identify their child's needs, and that parents and caregivers feel like programs are helping them respond effectively when their child is upset. So we also wanted to know if youth of different ages or identities have different experiences in programs, or if there are different outcomes for different groups of children and youth. So looking into that, we found that older youth reported outcomes in several youth development areas that we investigated. That includes with improved decision-making, development and mastery of skills, increased competence, and increased sense of belonging. And when I say older youth, I'm referring to youth in 10th grade or above, or out of school youth. We did, and among African-American and Black children and youth, we found that they were more likely to agree that an adult at their program cared about them, and some other questions that we had on the survey that were related to positive connections to adults. We found that Asian and Pacific Islander youth were most likely to agree with questions specifically related to improved development and mastery of skills. And we found that Latinx participants were most likely to agree to questions related to improved decision-making. We also asked youth to identify their sexual orientation on the survey, and about 9% of youth in grades 6 and up who completed the survey identified as LGBTQ. And we found that these youth reported very similarly strong outcomes and assessments of program quality. So there, it's a positive thing to see that there weren't any differences there. Okay, and then I just have a couple quotes here from participants in the programs, just to give you a sense of what the participants are saying. So we have college track keeps me where I need to go every step of the way, especially right now with all of the applications I need to fill out and everything I need to do. They let us know what we need to, they let us know when we need to do it and how to do it. And all these workshops really keep us on track. And that is from College Track's Empowering Students to and Through College that works with high school students. And then students are in the early years of post-secondary. And then on the right, we have a quote from a parent who participated in a family resource center. And then that's Banana's Healthy Havens Court Early Care and Kinder Readiness Hub. And they said, our program staff is more than a teacher for us. She's like a friend. So that when you have certain situations with your kids where you don't know what to do, she has the tools or resources that we can benefit from. Having her as a resource provider, I've been learning about how to deal with those ups and downs with my little one. And so that is the end of the presentation of the main report where we answered those three questions. Before I turn to the strategy level reports, are there any other questions from you all?
I had a quick question and I might've missed this, but I'm curious about how we crosswalk socioeconomic status.
I mean, of individual participants, that's not data that's collected. We could use zip code as a proxy, but that data is not collected in CitySpan, which is the client management system that OFCY uses.
Okay. And a follow-up question to that is then, so if we needed to, we could look across census tracts potentially then?
You mean for like a proxy to look at socioeconomic status of the participants?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
We don't collect on participant census level data. So in the CitySpan, the clients only are asked to enroll we only ask programs to collect clients' date of birth, race, ethnicity, gender, and zip code, but not their actual address. For the most part, programs by nature are expected to be serving low-income children and youth and families. Some strategies are very specific about it, like the comprehensive after school, where the fundings for school sites that serve that 50% or more of the students are eligible for free or reduced price meals. And then the expectation is that the programs are free and prioritizing those students. So yeah, we don't have programs collected on their enrollment for the clients and enter into CitySpan, though many of them do themselves. For some of the programs have those standards that they collect. So if that does help you.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And then another question, I'm just trying to think about some connector points. So that's why I'm asking these particular questions. Other question is just regards, so I noticed that there's a lot of partnerships with OUSD. And so I wonder, and I think you alluded to like folks highlighting that in the report. I'm wondering if we've ever done an evaluation on the OUSD side around like the effectiveness of that and how to improve it.
So do you mean interviewing or surveying the OUSD partners to see like their perspective on the services that are being provided?
Yeah.
So we have, two years ago, we did do a survey of principals and community school managers for the after-school programs. Gotcha. We're going to be doing that again this year. We did do it last year too. So I'm sorry. Yes, we did it last year. So if you look in the comprehensive after-school report, there are some survey results from those programs, but that's the only time we've done that.
Okay.
Think about ways to do that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes our overview of the first section of the report, the main report. So now we'll turn to the second section, which is the strategy level summaries. And we're just going to provide a very high level overview from the career awareness and employment support. So these are just some of the RBA metrics that we've collected for these programs. If you look at the strategy summary, there's also a lot of detail on the types of services that these programs are providing to support the RBA goals. There's details about the demographics of the youth being served, including breakdown of their attendance and attendance by different subgroups. And we also have in them one of those RBA metric tables for each strategy. So as an example, this is the one for the queer awareness and employment support, where we're just looking at all of those different RBA metrics that we're interested in to answer those three questions. And then we also include some more information about the survey results. So for example, we found that 94% of youth in the strategy agreed that at their program, they learned about jobs they can have in the future. There's a bunch more results in the strategy report that you can look at. And then I just wanted to include the staff about some of the ways that they're helping students learn about jobs. So because of COVID, we changed our hiring fairs to career explorations or demonstrations. It was very engaging. The hands-on approach that we tried to capture even during COVID is extra work, but it's worth it. It really keeps them coming back. And so I thought this quote was a good one to include because it shows like how creative and adaptable programs had to be in this last year in order to continue to provide the wonderful services that they've been doing over the last couple years, given the context of COVID. And then for that third section of the report are the program profiles. And this is where readers can learn about the accomplishments of each individual program, as well as the demographics of their participants, and then the survey results for each individual survey question. So again, these profiles are kind of structured around our three guiding questions. So this is the first page of this, of the profile. We have the do questions, do it, and is anyone better off? And then on the second page of the profiles, we provide the demographics of the participants, as well as their attendance. And then for the next couple of pages, we provide the detailed breakdown of participant survey results. And this also has comparison it to all the programs in the strategy so that programs could kind of see where they fall in the strategy. Are there any questions about the profiles?
And I just want to point out that these are developed in part to share publicly, but also with the programs themselves. A big part of the evaluation work is that they want to have the programs use the evaluation data for continuous program improvement, and that these profiles are part of our kind of education work with the program. So we had a quarterly meeting with our grantees just yesterday where the evaluation team provided each program with their last year's profiles and kind of walked them through, and hopefully that they're sharing this with their own staff and their team and being able to kind of dig into what they see and how reflective it is of where they want to be as a program.
Yeah, we do get questions from programs after the programming ends, like, oh, when are we getting the program profiles? So I think that's a sign that they are using them, which is good for their continuous quality improvement processes. Okay. So, in conclusion, just want to share some overall takeaways from the report. So, commend programs for the creativity that they showed as they tried different ways to engage youth virtually or in new ways of working with youth in person when they had to abide by all the public safety requirements, modified internship and job placements, new virtual activities. They did a lot. There were some challenges with enrollment, as I had talked about. And I think another really important thing to take away from this report is how programs provide a lot more individualized services in the last year, such as wellness checks, referrals to resources, things that they could do over Zoom, but were really important in this last year when everyone was so isolated, just to have that connection, check and see how our young people are doing. So are there any questions? If you can also feel free to ask the question whenever it comes up for you, but we have some questions for you as well. We were was curious to hear about like what resonates for you in what we presented, what curiosities you might have, what you would want more clarity around, or if you have any recommendations for us or what you would like to see in the coming year in the evaluation.
Thank you, Ned. I'd say the next steps would be that this evaluation we'd hope would be adopted by the subcommittee and presented to the full POC at the meeting in December 1st. And then if that is adopted there, presented to the city council down the road. And so any advice you have as well for the presentation and what resonates there, this would be a good opportunity for SPR as they revise the report and the presentation.
I don't have any questions. I first want to just start with saying, you know, super appreciate the detail of the presentation and the you know, high level of the report, so that, you know, just, it's always, you know, it's a very thick report. So it's helpful to like have the charts on there and having you explain it. And I think it'll be helpful for both the larger POC as well as for City Council. So just appreciation on the ease of use of viewing. I don't know that there's anything I would add. And I think, you know, just having the background from y'all's interviews with programs and being able to just highlight the real shifts that folks made, which just overall super appreciation for all of our community and institutional partners for pivoting in such a quick and thoughtful way to make sure that we did the best we could in Oakland with the resources that we had. So I don't know that I have anything more that I would, you know, anything that I would shift or change. I don't know how Dwayne or Jorge feel.
Yeah, I would say thank you so much for the presentation. Something that resonated with me was simply the socioeconomic portion of everything, or in particular, the districts that were, benefited by the programs funded by the OFCY. I actually kind of want to take another look at that. I didn't get a chance to take a picture of it, but that was something that really resonated with me. And then it was just really interesting seeing all of the statistics associated with, you know, the funding and how many people and age groups benefited. And yeah, it was very informative. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Pecolia. Thanks, Dwayne.
This is Jorge, and I just want to say that it's most interesting to me, most fascinating, and I'm glad that, you know, folks are using the resources available, as, you know, the Fruitvale being one of the most highly percentage of program use. And so there was one portion of the presentation, I think it may have been where the results-based accountability. So knowing, I think one of the things for me was knowing how the surveys were administered, maybe, or how you received that feedback would be helpful to know. And then whether or not it was culturally appropriate. I know that there's, you know, large Spanish speaking population, but there's also, you know, some other dialects as well, like Mum, which is it's this language that's spoken a lot in the Fruitvale. And so I think some of that background would be good. At least it would, it's something that I would have been interested in just knowing a little bit more of. But outside of that, it was just really impressionable. So thank you.
Great. That's good feedback, Jorge. Thank you. Yeah, we can definitely provide a little more description around that. So the surveys were administered either online or by paper. Programs had a choice in how they wanted to administer it, and some used both ways depending on what was easiest for the participants. And they were translated into four languages. They had Spanish, Arabic, Chinese, and English. And those are the languages that have been requested. Oh, and we had Vietnamese for after-school programs, because one of the after-school programs requested Vietnamese.
Okay, thank you.
And you collect them, the surveys are also broken up by age. So there's a different survey for the younger children. They only start surveying from grades 3 and up. We don't survey children younger than age 8. So, but there's surveys for the children and then for older youth. So it's kind of the age appropriate ones. We also work to tailor the surveys. So the questions are, there's a lot of universal questions, but there are also some specific ones for each strategy to get at the different characteristics out of like the career awareness strategy, for example. They're also anonymous is one part of it, so that we don't ask the youth to identify their name so they can feel more free in their feedback. And the last couple of years, we've had the surveys open from, I think, about right now, November, December, through to the end of April, to give programs time to field them when it's best and most appropriate in their schedules with the young people. So how many total surveys did you get from youth last year?
Hold on a second.
I don't want to misquote.
It was 5,147 from youth participants, and then 645 from parents and caregivers. And then I didn't really mention in this presentation, but we also surveyed educators at the programs at the Head Start and Child Development Centers that received mental health consultation through the socio-emotional well-being strategy. And we got 101 surveys from those educators.
This is all good feedback. We'd love to also get feedback from the public. I know there's 6 people who've been patiently listening to the presentation and may have their comments as part of a public comment to this piece. So if there's anyone interested from the public, you could raise your hand.
We have Laura.
Hi, I'm Laura Cabral. I'm from Safe Passages. I'm the Early Learning and Family Resource Network Director. And I have the privilege of overseeing our Baby Learning Communities Collaborative Program. I just wanna say, I worked with Mika and the team to figure out some issues with the links for the surveys. So thank you so much, Mika. It was multiple sessions. And we figured out how to make the surveys more accessible to families. And so we saw an increase in surveys that parents provided both in Arabic and in Spanish and English. I just did want to add that right now we don't really have a way to get families to be able to, mom-speaking families, to be able to participate in the surveys without having an extensive amount of staff time dedicated to be able to do translations. Part of that is the issues with written language and the and also the other thing is what we found is different dialects within the Mayan community. So this year, one thing we were able to do is focus groups with both mom-speaking families, but also Mayan Quiché-speaking families. So there's several dialects within the Mayan community. And so we did focus groups as a way to be able to really get information and have conversations with families that would not be possible using surveys. So, but it was also very tedious and time consuming. And also, we needed to find funds to be able to do that. So I did want to acknowledge that that is something that is right now missing, but also I think an opportunity for us to really figure out as a community how we can get that information. And especially from communities that really, when it comes to us as providers, need to do, as much as we can to have those conversations and be able to know, have informed information about how we plan for our programs.
Thanks, Laura. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Laura. Did we have any other attendees who wanted to make any comments on the presentation at this time? Okay, any other notes from any city staff or subcommittee staff, POC?
Well, I would just ask at this time that, you know, as a subcommittee that you, I'm glad you listened to this and had the opportunity to hear and ask your questions of SPR. We look to bring this again on December 1st, the next POC meeting as a presentation. And as the subcommittee to have, I'd look to you to kind of just share what your takeaways are from today's meeting and how you're seeing the evaluation work before Mika is jumping into it. And then to also help guide some of the conversation with other POC members and maybe pull out some of the work, like for them, what resonates. I know we don't have, again, the kind of a co-chair, we're chairs of the subcommittee, but since we do have two members, Jorge and Pecolia, if you both would be able to be the, you know, kind of the subcommittee chairs here and represent this at the meeting, that'd be super helpful, along with, you know, our POC chair, Dwayne Davis.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, and I just want to appreciate the work of everyone who's here, including the public. Laura represents a lot of the work that goes into the evaluation from working with the families. And I think you see it from the evaluation report, the three sections that it's working with 149 programs across 9 strategies for 1 fund. And depending on how you want to look at the fund, you could look at it from the fund level, the strategy level, or the program level to get the information you'd want on who's being served and how effective are the services. I will be putting this up on our website, on the OFCR website and the evaluation page, and trying to do a better job promoting their report and the findings, because they do an extensive amount of work. To have 5,000 young people give their feedback is tremendous, and I really want to kind of value their time and for that feedback and promote this. So just want to put that out there.
Yeah, totally agree. Thank you so much, Social Policy Research Associates. Very much so appreciate your commitment to making sure our students and families' voices are represented. Can I ask a logistical question about the co-chair piece?
Yes, sorry.
No problems. So if I'm understanding, it's helping to kind of introduce this and at the next POC meeting. And then if we have another committee, it'll be somewhere probably in the spring or in next fall. Is that about, is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't mind being co-chair, Dwayne, and of this committee. I don't know, Jorge, if you wanted to jump at it.
It depend on when the next meeting would be, because I don't want to say that I will be able to and not be available, because a nonprofit that I work for may start sending teams, and so I may be beginning to travel.
Okay. So yeah, I'm down to do it. I can be flexible.
Colia, that's great. And Jorge, thank you, both of you. Thank you, Pecolia. So the next one will be December 1st, just the POC meeting to speak on behalf of the subcommittee's work there.
Okay.
And you're right, if we do need to reconvene, it'd be most likely in spring.
Okay.
Yeah. Perfect. So we'll take a vote on that at the next meeting, correct?
So for today, what you'll do, today is just to push this to the full, if you feel good about this, that, you know, we're closing out this meeting and it'll come to the December 1st meeting for the PSD. And that's when you'll take a vote to approve it and send it to City Council, because they need to adopt it as well.
Perfect. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, if that is all from city staff, SPRA and the public, we can move on to administrative matters, including general announcements and upcoming meetings.
Yep, I think I kind of just handled that, the upcoming meetings, administrative matters. I probably jumped the gun there on the agenda.
But, no, you're good.
Yeah. It's all good.
So yeah, December 1st will be the POC meeting, a full body of it. And on the agenda will be this evaluation report, as well as an update on the RFP process. Now that the strategic plan is approved, we're looking to get a request for proposals out to community groups. So it'll be an exciting meeting in December, and looking forward to everybody being there.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Mike. Okay, I wanted to say thank you again to SPR for that extremely informative presentation. Thank you to the public for attending, and thank you to city staff and POC for being here as well. I think that will conclude our meeting for today.
Thank you, Dwayne.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.